Remember Me, Disc 7.
So the apartment's very impressive, John. I adopt a bland, corporate wife-type manner, sweeping an arm around the space. Many congratulations.
Thank you, I'm pleased with it. He replies in equally bland tones. How's the memory doing?
Pretty much the same as before.
You haven't remembered anything new?
No, nothing.
That's a shame.
Yeah. I'm trying to stay natural, but there's an electric atmosphere growing between us as we face each other. My breaths are coming just slightly short. I glance up at Eric, convinced he must have noticed something, but he hasn't even flickered. Can't he feel it? Can't he see it? Eric, we need to talk about the Bayswater project, says Ava, who has been riffling through her soft leather handbag. I went to see the site yesterday and made some notes.
Lexi, why don't you look around the apartment while Ava and I talk? Eric cuts her off, loosening his arm from mine. John will show you.
Oh, I stiffen. No, don't worry.
I'd be happy to show you. John's voice is dry and kind of bored. If you're interested.
Really, there's no need.
Darling, John designed the whole building, says Eric reprovingly. It's a great opportunity for you to find out about the vision of the company. Come this way and I'll explain the initial concept.
John gestures at the other side of the room. I can't get out of this.
That would be great, I say at last. Fine. If he wants to talk, I'll talk.
I follow John across the room, and we pause next to the tumbling streams of the water feature. How could anyone live with water thundering down the wall like this?
So, I say politely, how do you think of all these ideas, all these statements, or whatever they are?
John frowns thoughtfully and my heart sinks. I hope he's not going to come up with a load of pretentious stuff about his artistic genius. I'm really not in the mood.
I just ask myself, what would a wanker like? He says at last, and I put it in.
I can't help a half laugh of shock. Well, if I were a wanker, I'd love this.
There you go.
He takes a step nearer and lowers his voice beneath the sound of the water.
So you really haven't remembered anything?
No, nothing at all.
Okay.
He exhales sharply.
We'll have to meet. We'll have to talk. There's a place we go, the old canal house in Islington. You'll notice the high ceilings, Lexi,
he adds in a much louder voice.
They're a trademark feature of all our developments.
He glances over and catches my expression.
What?
Are you crazy? I hiss, glancing over to make sure Eric can't hear. I'm not meeting you. I lower my voice still further. For your information, I haven't found a single piece of evidence that you and I are having an affair. Not one.
What a great sense of space,
I add at full volume. Evidence? John looks as if he doesn't understand.
Like what?
Like, I don't know. A love note?
We didn't write each other love notes.
Or trinkets?
Trinkets?
John looks like he wants to laugh.
We weren't much into trinkets either.
Well, it couldn't have been much of a love affair then, I retort. I've looked in my dressing table, nothing. I've looked in my diary, nothing. I've asked my sister, she'd never even heard of you.
Lexi.
He pauses as though working out how to explain the situation to me.
It was a secret affair. That would mean an affair which you keep secret.
So you have no proof. I knew it. I turn on my heel and stride away towards the fireplace, John following closely behind.
You want proof?
I can hear him muttering in low, incredulous tones.
What, like, you have a strawberry mark on your left buttock?
I don't.
I swivel round in triumph, then stop abruptly as Eric glanced across the room at us.
I don't know how you came up with this amazing use of light.
I wave at Eric, who waves back and continues his conversation. I know you don't have a birthmark on your buttock. John rolls his eyes. You don't have any birthmarks at all. Just a mole on your arm. I'm briefly silenced. He's right.
But so what?
That could be a lucky guess. I fold my arms. I know, but it's not. He looks at me steadily. Lexi, I'm not making it up. We're having an affair. We love each other, deeply and passionately.
Look. I thrust my hands through my hair. This is just mad. I wouldn't have an affair, not with you or anyone. I've never been unfaithful to anybody in my life.
We had sex on that floor 4 weeks ago. He cuts me off. Right there. He nods at a huge fluffy white sheepskin. I stare at it speechlessly. You were on top, he adds.
Stop it. Flustered, I wheel round and stride away towards the far end of the space, where a trendy perspex staircase rises to a mezzanine level.
Let's take a look at the wet room complex, John says loudly as he follows me up. I think you'll like it.
No, I won't, I shoot over my shoulder. Leave me alone.
We both reach the top of the staircase and turn to look over the steel balustrade. I can see Eric on the level below and, beyond, the lights of London through the massive windows. I have to hand it to him. It's a staggering apartment. Beside me, John is sniffing the air.
Hey, he says, have you been eating salt and vinegar crisps?
Maybe. I give him a suspicious look. John's eyes open wide.
I'm impressed. How did he sneak those past the food fascist?
He's not a food fascist, I say, feeling an immediate need to defend Eric. He just cares about nutrition.
He's Hitler. If he could round up every loaf of bread and put it in a camp, he would.
Stop it.
He'd gas them all. Finger rolls first, then croissants.
Stop it.
My mouth twists with an urge to giggle and I turn away. This guy is funnier than I thought at first. And he's kind of sexy, close up, with his rumpled dark hair. But then, lots of things are funny and sexy. Friends is funny and sexy. It doesn't mean I'm having an affair with it.
What do you want?
At last I turn to face John, helpless. What do you expect me to do?
What do I want?
He pauses, his brow knitted as though he's thinking it through.
I want you to tell your husband you don't love him and come home with me so we can start a new life together.
He's serious. I almost want to laugh.
You want me to come and live with you, I say, as though to clarify arrangements. Right now, just like that.
In, say, 5 minutes.
He glances at his watch.
I have a few things to do first.
You're a total psycho.
I shake my head.
I'm not a psycho, he says patiently. I love you. You love me. Really. You have to take my word for that.
I don't have to take your word for anything. I suddenly resent his confidence. I'm married, okay? I have a husband whom I love, whom I've promised love forever. Here's the proof.
I brandish my wedding ring at him.
This is proof.
You love him?
John ignores the ring.
You feel love for him? Right deep down here?
He thumps his chest.
I want to snap. Yes, I'm desperately in love with Eric.
And shut him up for good. But for some ridiculous reason, I can't quite bring myself to lie.
Maybe it's not quite there yet, but I'm sure it will be, I say, sounding more defiant than I mean to. Eric's a fantastic guy. Everything's wonderful between us.
John nods politely.
You haven't had sex since the accident, have you?
I stare at him mistrustfully.
Have you?
There's a glint in his eye.
I... we...
I flounder. Maybe we have, maybe we haven't. I'm not in the habit of discussing my private life with you.
Yeah, you are. There's a sudden wryness in his face. You are. That's the point.
To my surprise, he reaches for one of my hands. He just holds it for a moment, looking at it. Then, very slowly, he starts tracing over the skin with his thumb. I can't bring myself to move. My skin is fizzing. His thumb is leaving a trail of delicious sensation wherever it goes. I can feel tiny prickles up the back of my neck.
So, what do you think?
Eric's booming voice heralds from below, and I jump a mile, whipping my hand away. What am I thinking?
It's great, darling!
I trill back over the balustrade, my voice unnaturally high.
We'll just be a couple more seconds.
I draw back, out of sight of the floor below, and beckon John to follow.
Look, I've had enough, I say in a swift undertone. Leave me alone. I don't know you. I don't love you. Things are hard enough for me right now. I just want to get on with my life with my husband. Okay?
I make to head down the stairs.
No, not okay.
John grabs hold of my arm.
Lexi, you don't know the whole picture. You're unhappy with Eric. He doesn't love you. He doesn't understand you.
Of course Eric loves me.
Now I'm really rattled. He sat by my hospital bed night and day. He brought me these amazing taupe roses.
You think I didn't want to sit by your hospital bed night and day?
John's eyes darken.
Lexi, it nearly killed me.
Let me go.
I try to pull my arm free, but John holds firm.
You can't throw us away.
He's scanning my face desperately.
It's in there. It's all in there somewhere. I know it is.
You're wrong.
With a huge effort, I wrench my arm out of his grasp.
It's not.
I clatter down the stairs without looking back, straight into Eric's arms.
Hi.
He laughs.
You seem in a rush. Is everything all right?
I don't feel too good. I put a hand to my brow. I've got a headache. Can we go now?
Of course we can, darling.
He squeezes my shoulders and glances up at the mezzanine level.
Have you said goodbye to John?
Yes. Let's just go.
As we head to the door, I cling on to his expensive jacket, letting the feel of him soothe my jangled nerves. This is my husband. This is who I'm in love with. This is reality. 12. Okay. I need my memory back. I've had it with amnesia. I've had it with people telling me they know more about my life than I do. It's my memory. It belongs to me. I stare into my eyes, reflected an inch away in the mirrored wardrobe door. This is a new habit of mine, to stand right up close to the mirror so the only bit I can see is my eyes. It's comforting. It makes me feel as if I'm looking at the old me.
Remember, you moron,
I instruct myself in a low, fierce voice. Remember. My eyes stare back at me as though they know everything but won't tell. I sigh and lean my head against the glass in frustration. In the days since we got back from the show apartment, I've done nothing but immerse myself in the last 3 years. I've looked through photo albums, watched movies I know I've seen, listened to songs that I know the old Lexi heard 100 times, but nothing's worked. Whichever mental filing cabinet my missing memories are locked in, it's pretty sturdy. It's not about to fly open just because I listened to a song called You're Beautiful by James someone or other. Stupid secretive brain. I mean, who's in charge here, me or it? Yesterday, I went to see that neuropsychologist, Neil. He nodded sympathetically as I poured everything out and scribbled loads of notes. Then he said it was all fascinating and he might write a research paper on me. When I pressed him, he added that maybe it would help to write out a timeline and I could go and see a therapist if I liked. But I don't need therapy. I need my memory.
The mirror is misting up from my breath. I'm pressing my forehead harder against the glass, as though the answers are all inside the mirror me, as though I can get them if I concentrate enough.
Lexi, I'm off.
Eric comes into the bedroom holding a DVD out of its box.
Darling, you left this on the rug. Sensible location for a DVD.
I take the disc from him. It's the Ambition EP1 DVD that I started watching the other day. I'm sorry, Eric, I say quickly, taking it from him. I don't know how it got there. That's a lie. It got there when Eric was out and I had about 50 DVDs all scattered over the rug, together with magazines and photo albums and sweet wrappers. If he'd seen it, he'd have had a heart attack.
Your taxi will be here at 10, says Eric. I'm off now.
Great. I kiss him like I do every morning now. It's actually starting to feel quite natural. Have a good day.
You too.
He squeezes my shoulder.
Hope it goes well.
It will, I say with confidence. I'm going back into work today, full time. Not to take over the department. Obviously, I'm not ready to do that. But to start relearning my job, catching up on what I've missed. It's 5 weeks since the accident. I can't just sit around at home anymore. I have to do something. I have to get my life back. And my friends. On the bed, all ready, are 3 glossy gift bags with presents inside for Fee, Debs and Carolyn, which I'm going to take in today. I spent ages choosing the perfect gifts. In fact, every time I think about them, I want to hug myself with pleasure. Humming, I head into the sitting room and slot the Ambition DVD into the player. I never did watch the rest of this. Maybe it'll help me get back into office mode. I fast forward through the introductory shots until I come to a bit with me in a limo with 2 guys in suits and press play.
Lexi and her teammates won't be taking it easy tonight, a male voiceover is saying.
The camera focuses in on me and I hold my breath with anticipation.
We're going to win this task,
I'm saying in a sharp voice to the guys, slapping the back of one hand on the other palm.
If we have to work round the clock, we're going to win, okay? No excuses.
My jaw drops slightly. Is that fierce, scary businesswoman me? I've never spoken like that in my life.
As ever, Lexi is taking her team to task, says the voiceover. But has the Cobra gone too far this time?
I don't understand what he's talking about. What Cobra? The picture now flashes to one of the guys from the limo. He's sitting in an office chair, a night sky visible through the plate glass window behind him.
She ain't human, he's muttering. There's only so many fucking hours in the day. We're all doing our best, you know, but does she fucking care?
As he's talking, an image of me striding around some warehouse has appeared on the screen again. I feel a sudden pang of dismay. Is he talking about me? Now the picture cuts to a full stand-up row between me and the same guy. We're standing on a London street and he's trying to defend himself, but I'm not letting him get a word in.
You're sacked!
I snap at last, my voice so scathing that I wince.
You're sacked from my team!
And the Cobra has struck, the jaunty voiceover adds. Let's see that moment again.
Hang on a minute. Is he saying, I'm the Cobra? To menacing music, a slow motion replay has begun on screen, zooming right into my face.
You're sacked, I'm hissing. You're sacked from my team.
I stare, light-headed with horror. What the fuck have they done? They've manipulated my voice. It sounds like I'm a snake.
And Lexi's on top venomous form this week, says the male voiceover. Meanwhile, over in the other team,
a different group of people in suits appear on the screen and starts arguing about a price negotiation, but I'm too shell-shocked to move. Why
How? Why didn't anyone tell me? Why didn't anyone warn me about this? On autopilot, I reach for my phone and jab in Eric's number.
Hi, Lexi.
Eric, I've just watched the DVD of that TV show.
My voice comes shooting out in agitation.
They call me the Cobra. I was a total bitch to everyone. You never told me about that.
Sweetheart, it was a great show, says Eric soothingly. You came across really well.
But they named me after a snake.
So what?
So I don't want to be a snake.
I know I sound almost hysterical, but I can't help it.
No one likes snakes. I'm more like a squirrel or a koala.
Koalas are soft and furry and a bit snaggly.
A koala. Lexi. Eric laughs. Darling, you're a cobra. You have timing, you have attack. That's what makes you a great businesswoman.
But I don't want to be...
I break off as the buzzer sounds. My taxi's here. I'd better go. I head into the bedroom and pick up my three glossy gift bags, trying to regain my former optimism, trying to be excited about the day again. But suddenly all my confidence has evaporated. I'm a snake. No wonder everyone hates me. As my taxi wends its way towards the Victoria Palace Road, I sit rigid on the back seat, clutching my gift bags, giving myself a pep talk. First of all, everyone knows the TV skews things. No one really thinks I'm a snake. Besides which, that TV show was ages ago now. Everyone's probably forgotten about it. Oh, God. The trouble with giving yourself a pep talk is, deep down, you know it's all bullshit. The taxi deposits me outside the building, and I take a deep breath, tugging my beige Armani suit straight. Then, with trepidation, I make my way up to the third floor. As I step out of the lift, the first thing I see is Fee, Carolyn and Debs standing by the coffee machine. Fee is gesturing to her hair and talking with animation, while Carolyn chips in. But as I appear, the conversation instantly stops, as though someone pulled the plug on the radio. Hi, you guys! I look around with the warmest, friendliest smile I can muster. I'm back again! Hi, Lexi. There's a general muted reply, and Fee makes a kind of acknowledging shrug. Okay, it wasn't a smile, but at least it was a reaction. You look really nice, Fee. That top's great. I gesture at her cream shirt, and she follows my gaze in surprise. And Debs, you look fab too. And Carolyn. Your hair looks so cool, all cropped like that, and those boots are fantastic. These? Carolyn snorts with laughter and kicks one brown suede boot against the other. I've had them for years. Well, still, they're really striking. I'm gabbling with nerves, talking a load of bollocks. No wonder they all seem nonplussed. Fee's arms are folded and Debs looks like she wants to giggle. So, anyway, I force myself to slow down a bit. I got you all a little something. Fee, this is for you and Debs. As I hand over the gift bags, they suddenly look ridiculously shiny and conspicuous. What's this for? Says Debs blankly. Well, you know, just to, I falter slightly. You guys are my friends and... go on, open them. Giving each other uncertain looks, all three start ripping at their wrapping paper. Gucci, Fee says in disbelief as she pulls out a green jewellery box. Lexi, I can't accept. Yes, you can. Please, just open it. You'll see. Silently, Fee snaps it open to reveal a gold bangle watch. Do you remember? I say eagerly. We always used to look at them in the shop windows, every weekend. And now you've actually got one.
Actually,
puffy sighs, looking uncomfortable. Lexi, I got it 2 years ago. She lifts up her sleeve and she's wearing exactly the same watch, only a little duller and older looking.
Oh,
I say, my heart sinking. Oh, right. Well, never mind. I can take it back or exchange it. We can get something else.
Lexi, I can't use this.
Carolyn chimes in and hands back the perfume gift set I bought her, together with the leather tote it came in.
That smell makes me gag.
But it's your favourite, I say in bewilderment.
Was,
she corrects me,
before I fell pregnant.
You're pregnant? I stare at her, overwhelmed.
Oh my God, Carolyn, congratulations! That's so wonderful. I'm so happy for you. Matt will be the best dad ever. It's not Matt's baby.
She cuts me off flat. It's not, I say stupidly. But what? Did you two break up? They can't have broken up. It's impossible. Everyone assumed Carolyn and Matt would be together forever.
I don't want to talk about it, okay?
Carolyn says, almost in a whisper. To my horror, I see her eyes have turned pink behind her glasses and she's breathing hard.
See you!
She thrusts the wrapping paper and ribbon at me, turns and strides off, back towards the office. Great, Lexi, says Fee sarcastically, just when we thought she'd finally got over Matt.
I didn't know, I say aghast. I had no idea. I'm so sorry.
I rub my face, feeling hot and flustered.
Debs, open your present.
I've bought Debs a cross studded with tiny diamonds. She's so crazy about jewellery, and you can't go wrong with a cross. She has to love it. In silence, Debs pulls off the wrapping.
I know it's quite extravagant,
I say nervously, but I wanted to get something really special.
This is a cross.
Debbie thrusts the box back at me, her nose wrinkled as though it smells of something rancid.
I can't wear this. I'm Jewish.
You're Jewish?
My mouth hangs open.
Since when?
Since I've been engaged to Jacob, she says, as though it's obvious. I've converted.
Wow, I say joyfully. You're engaged!
And of course, now I can't miss the platinum ring on her left hand with a diamond lodged right in the centre of the band. Debs wears so many rings, I hadn't noticed it.
When's the wedding?
My words spill out in excitement.
Where's it happening?
Next month. She looks away. In Wiltshire.
Next month? Oh my God, Debs! But I haven't got...
I break off abruptly into a kind of hot, thudding silence. I was about to say, but I haven't got an invitation. I haven't got an invitation because I haven't been invited.
I mean, congratulations.
Somehow I keep a bright smile plastered on my face.
I hope it all goes brilliantly. And don't worry, I can easily return the cross and the watch and the perfume.
With trembling fingers, I start stuffing all the ripped wrapping paper into one of the gift bags.
Yeah, says Fee in an awkward voice. Well, see you, Lexi.
Bye. Deb still can't look me in the eye. They both walk off and I watch them go, my chin stiff from wanting to cry.
Great work, Lexi. You didn't win your friends back. You just fucked up everything even more.
A present for me?
Byron's sarcastic voice hits the back of my head, and I turn to see him loping along the corridor, coffee in hand.
How sweet of you, Lexi.
God, it gives me the creeps. He's the snake.
Hi, Byron, I say as briskly as I can. Good to see you.
Summoning all my strength, I lift my chin high and sweep a stray hair back off my face. I can't crumble.
It's very brave of you to come back, Lexi,
Byron says as we head down the corridor.
Admirable.
Not really, I say as confidently as I can. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, any questions? You know where I am. Although today I'll be with James Garrison most of the day. You remember James Garrison?
Bloody, bloody, bloody. Why does he pick the people I've never heard of? Remind me, I say reluctantly.
He's head of our distributor, Southeys. They distribute stock around the country, like carpet, flooring, the stuff we sell. They drive it around in lorries.
His tone is polite, but he's smirking. Yes, I remember Southeys, I say cuttingly. Thanks. Why are you seeing them?
Well, says Byron after a pause, the truth is they've lost their way. It's crunch time. If they can't improve their systems, we're going to have to look elsewhere.
Right. I nod in as boss-like a way as I can. Well, keep me posted. We've reached my office and I open the door. See you later, Byron. I close the door, dump my gift bags on the sofa, open the filing cabinet, and take out an entire drawer's worth of files. Trying not to feel daunted, I sit down at the desk and open the first one, which contains minutes of departmental meetings. 3 years. I can catch up on 3 years. It's not that long. 20 minutes later, my brain is already aching. I haven't read anything serious or heavy for what seems like months. And this stuff is as dense as treacle. Budget discussions, contracts up for renewal, performance evaluations. I feel like I'm back at college, doing about 6 degrees at once. I've started a sheet of paper, questions to ask, and already I'm on to the second side.
How are you doing?
The door has opened silently and Byron is looking in. Doesn't he knock? Fine, I say defensively. Really well. I just have a couple of tiny questions.
Fire away.
He leans against the door jamb. Okay. First, what's QAS?
That's our new accounting system software. Everyone's been trained in it.
Well, I can get trained too, I say briskly, scribbling on my sheet. And who's services.com?
Our online customer service provider.
What? I wrinkle my brow, confused. But what about the customer services department?
All made redundant years ago, says Byron, sounding bored. The company was restructured and a load of departments were contracted out.
Right, I nod, trying to take all this in, and glance down at my sheet again. So what about BD Brooks? What's that?
They're our ad agency,
says Byron, with exaggerated patience.
They make advertisements for us, on the radio and the TV.
I know what an ad agency is, I snap, more hotly than I intended. So what happened to Pinkham Smith? We've had such a great relationship with them.
They don't exist anymore.
Byron rolls his eyes.
They went bust. Jesus, Lexi, you don't know a bloody thing, do you?
I open my mouth to retort, but I can't. He's right. It's as if the landscape I knew has been swept away by some kind of hurricane. Everything's been rebuilt and I don't recognise any of it.
You're never going to pick all this up again.
Byron is surveying me pityingly. Yes, I am.
Lexi, face it. You're mentally ill. You shouldn't be putting your head under this kind of strain.
I'm not mentally ill, I exclaim furiously and get to my feet. I push roughly past Byron out of the door and Claire looks up in alarm, snapping her mobile phone shut. Hi, Lexi. Did you want something? A cup of coffee? She looks terrified, like I'm about to bite her head off or fire her or something. Okay, now is my chance to show her I'm not a bitch boss from hell. I'm me. Hi, Claire, I say in my most friendly, warm manner and perch on the corner of her desk. Everything okay? Yes. Her eyes are wide and wary. I just wondered if you'd like me to get you a coffee.
You?
She stares as though suspecting a trick.
Get me a coffee?
Yes, why not? I beam, and she flinches.
It's okay.
She slides out of her chair, her eyes fixed on me as though she thinks I really am a cobra.
I'll get one.
Wait, I say almost desperately. You know, Claire, I'd like to get to know you better. Maybe one day we could have lunch together, hang out, go shopping. Claire looks even more Polax than before.
Yeah. Okay, Lexi,
she mumbles and scuttles down the corridor. I turn to see Byron still in the doorway, cracking up. What? I snap.
You really are a different person, aren't you?
He raises his eyebrows in wonder. Maybe I just want to be friendly with my staff and treat them with respect, I say defiantly. Anything wrong with that?
No. Byron lifts his hands. Lexi, that's a great idea.
He runs his eyes over me, that sarcastic smile still on his lips, then clicks his tongue as though remembering something.
That reminds me. Before I shoot off, there's one thing I left for you to deal with as director of the department. I thought it only right.
At last, he's treating me like the boss. Oh, yes? I lift my chin. What is it?
We've had an email from on high about people abusing lunch hours.
He reaches into his pocket and produces a piece of paper.
SJ wants all directors to give their teams a bollocking. Today, preferably.
Byron raises his eyebrows innocently.
Can I leave that one to you? Bastard.
Bastard! I'm pacing about my office, sipping my coffee, my stomach churning with nerves. I've never told anyone off before, let alone a whole department, let alone while simultaneously trying to prove that I'm really friendly and not a bitch boss from hell. I look yet again at the printed-out email from Natasha, Simon Johnson's PA. Colleagues, it has come to Simon's attention that members of staff are regularly pushing the limit of lunchtime well beyond the standard hour. This is unacceptable. He would be grateful if you could make this plain to your teams ASAP and enforce a stricter policy of checks. Thanks, Natasha. Okay. The point is, it doesn't actually say give your department a bollocking. I don't need to be aggressive or anything. I can make the point while still being pleasant. Maybe I can be all jokey and friendly. I'll start off, hey guys, are your lunch hours long enough? I'll roll my eyes to show I'm being ironic, and everyone will laugh, and someone will say, is there a problem, Lexi? And I'll smile ruefully and say, oh, it's not me, it's the stuffed shirts upstairs. So let's just try and make it back on time, yeah? And a few people will nod as though to say, fair enough. And it'll all be fine. Yes, that sounds good. Taking a deep breath, I fold the paper and put it away in my pocket, then head out of my office into the main open-plan flooring office. There's a chatter and buzz of people on the phone and typing and chatting to each other. For about a minute, no one even notices me. Then Fee looks up and nudges Carolyn, and she prods a girl I don't recognise, who brings her phone conversation to an end. Around the room, receivers go down and people look up from their screens and chairs swivel round, until gradually the whole office has come to a standstill. Hi, everyone, I say, my face prickling. Hey, guys. How's it going? No one replies, or even acknowledges that I've spoken.
They're all just staring up with the same mute, get on with it expression. Anyway, I try to sound bright and cheerful. I just wanted to say, are your lunch hours long enough?
What?
The girl at my desk looks blank. Are we allowed longer ones? No, I say hurriedly. I mean, they're too long.
I think they're fine,
she shrugs.
And now's just right for a bit of shopping.
Yeah, agrees another girl. You can just make it to the King's Road and back.
OK, I'm not really getting my point across here. And now two girls in the corner have started talking again.
Listen, everyone, please.
My voice is becoming shrill.
I have to tell you something about lunch hours. Some people in the company, not necessarily any of you.
Lexi, says Carolyn clearly, what the fuck are you talking about?
Fee and Debs explode with laughter, and my face flames with colour. Look, guys, I try to keep my composure. This is serious.
Serious.
Someone echoes, and there are sniggers around the room.
It's serious.
Very funny. I try to smile. But listen, seriously. Seriously. Now almost everyone in the room seems to be hissing or laughing or both. All the faces are alive. Everyone's enjoying the joke, except me. All of a sudden, a paper aeroplane flies past my ear and lands on the floor. I jump with shock. And the entire office erupts with gales of laughter.
Okay, well, look, just don't take too long of a lunch, okay?
I say desperately. No one's listening. Another paper aeroplane hits me on the nose, followed by a rubber. In spite of myself, tears spring to my eyes.
Anyway, I'll see you guys,
I manage.
Thanks for all your hard work.
With laughter following me, I turn and stumble out of the office. In a daze, I head towards the ladies, passing Dana on the way.
Going to the bathroom, Lexi?
She says in surprise as I'm pushing my way in.
You know, you have a key to the executive washroom. Much nicer.
I'm fine in here. I force a smile.
Really?
I head straight for the end cubicle, slam the door shut, and sink down with my head in my hands, feeling the tension drain from my body. That was the single most humiliating experience of my life. Except for the white swimsuit episode. Why did I ever want to be a boss? Why? All that happens is you lose your friends and have to give people bollockings and everyone hisses at you. And for what? A sofa in your office? A posh business card? At last, wearily, I lift my head and find myself focusing on the back of the cubicle door, which is covered in graffiti as usual. We've always used this door like a kind of message board to vent our frustrations or make jokes or just silly conversation. It gets fuller and fuller, then someone scrubs it clean and we start again. The cleaners have never said anything, and none of the executives ever come in here, so it's pretty safe. I'm running my eye down the messages, smiling at some libelous story about Simon Johnson, when a new message in blue marker catches my eye. It's Deb's handwriting, and it reads, "The Cobra's back." And underneath, in faint black biro, "Don't worry, I spat in her coffee." There's only one way to go, and that's to get really, really, really drunk. An hour later, and I'm slumped at the bar at the Bathgate Hotel, round the corner from work, finishing my third mojito. Already the world has turned a little blurry, but that's fine by me. As far as I'm concerned, the blurrier the better. Just as long as I can keep my balance on this bar stool.
Hi.
I lift my hand to get the attention of the barman. I'd like another one, please. The barman raises his eyebrows the merest amount, then says,
Of course.
I watch him a touch resentfully as he gets out the mint. Isn't he going to ask me why I want another one? Isn't he going to offer me some homespun barman wisdom?
He puts the cocktail on a coaster and adds a bowl of peanuts, which I push aside scornfully. I don't want anything soaking up the alcohol. I want it right in my bloodstream.
Can I get you anything else? A snack, perhaps?
He gestures at a small menu, but I ignore it and take a deep gulp of the mojito. It's cold and tangy and limey and perfect.
Do I look like a bitch to you? I say as I look up.
Honestly?
No.
The barman smiles. Well, I am, apparently. I take another slug of mojito. That's what all my friends say.
Some friends.
They used to be. I put my cocktail down and stare at it morosely.
I don't know where my life went wrong.
I sound slurred, even to my own ears.
That's what they all say.
A guy sitting at the end of the bar looks up from his Evening Standard. He has an American accent and dark receding hair.
No one knows where it went wrong.
No, but I really don't know. I lift a finger impressively. I have a car crash and boom, I wake up and I'm trapped in the body of a bitch.
Looks like you're trapped in the body of a babe to me.
The American guy edges along to the next bar stool, a smile on his face.
I wouldn't trade that body for anything.
I gaze at him in puzzlement for a moment, until realization dawns.
Oh, you're flirting with me. Sorry, but I'm already married to a guy, my husband.
I lift up my left hand, locate my wedding ring after a few moments, and point at it.
You see? Married.
I think intently for a moment.
Also, I may have a lover.
There's a muffled snort from the barman. I look up suspiciously, but his face is straight. I take another gulp of my drink and feel the alcohol kicking in, dancing round my head. My ears are buzzing and the room is starting to sway.
Which is a good thing. Room should sway. You know, I'm not drinking to forget,
I say conversationally to the barman.
I already forgot everything.
This suddenly strikes me as being so funny, I start giggling uncontrollably.
I had one bang on the head, and I forgot everything.
I'm clutching my stomach. Tears are edging out of my eyes.
I even forgot I had a husband. But I do.
The barman is exchanging glances with the American guy.
And they said there wasn't a cure. But, you know, doctors can be wrong, can't they?
I appeal around the bar. Quite a few people seem to be listening now, and a couple of them nod.
Doctors are always wrong, says the American guy emphatically. They're all assholes.
Exactly,
I swivel to him.
You are so right. Okay.
I take a deep gulp of my mojito, then turn back to the barman.
Can I ask you a small favour? Can you take that cocktail shaker and hit me over the head with it? They said it wouldn't work, but how do they know?
The barman smiles, as if he thinks I'm joking.
Great. I sigh impatiently. I'll have to do it myself.
Before he can stop me, I grab the cocktail shaker and whack myself on the forehead.
Ow!
I drop the shaker and clutch my head.
Ouch! That hurt!
Did you see that? I can hear someone exclaiming behind me. She's a nutter.
Miss, are you all right?
The barman looks alarmed.
Can I call you a...
Wait!
I lift a hand. For a few moments I'm poised, completely still, waiting for memories to flood into my brain. Then I subside in disappointment.
It didn't work. Not even one, bugger.
I'd get her a strong black coffee. I can hear the American guy saying in an undertone to the barman,
Bloody nerve, I don't want a coffee.
I'm about to tell him this when my phone beeps. After a small struggle with the zip of my bag, I get my phone out, and it's a text from Eric. Hi, on my way home, E.
That's from my husband,
I inform the barman as I put away my phone.
You know, he can drive a speedboat.
Great, says the barman politely.
Yeah, it is.
I nod emphatically, about 7 times.
It is great. It's the perfect, perfect marriage.
I consider for a moment.
Except we haven't had sex.
You haven't had sex? The American guy echoes in astonishment.
We have had sex.
I take a slug of mojito and lean towards him confidentially.
I just don't remember it.
That's good, huh? He starts to laugh. Blew your mind, huh?
Blew my mind.
His words land in my brain like a big neon flashing light.
Blew my mind.
You know what? I say slowly.
You may not realise it, but that's very significant.
I'm not sure that word came out quite right, but I know what I mean. If I have sex, maybe it'll blow my mind. Maybe that's just what I need. Maybe Amy was right all along. It's nature's own amnesia cure.
I'm going to do it.
I put my glass down with a crash.
I'm going to have sex with my husband.
You go, girl, says the American, laughing.
Have fun.
I'm going to have sex with Eric. This is my mission. As I ride home in a taxi, I'm quite excited. As soon as I get back, I'll jump him, and we'll have amazing sex, and my mind will be blown, and suddenly everything will be clear. The only tiny snag I can think of is I don't have the marriage manual on me, and I can't totally remember the order of foreplay. I close my eyes, trying to ignore my dizzy head and recall exactly what Eric wrote. Something was in a clockwise direction, and something else was with gentle then urgent tongue strokes. Thighs? Chest? I should have memorised it. Or written it on a post-it. I could have stuck it on the headboard. OK, I think I have it. Buttocks first, then inner thighs, then scrotum.
Sorry,
says the taxi driver. Oops, I didn't realise I was speaking aloud. Nothing, I say hastily. Earlobes came in somewhere, I suddenly remember. Maybe that was the urgent tongue strokes. Anyway, it doesn't matter. What I can't remember, I'll make up. I mean, it can't be that we're some boring old married couple and do it exactly the same way each time, can it? Can it? I feel a tiny qualm, which I ignore. It's going to be great. Plus, I have fantastic underwear on. Silky and matching and everything. I don't even possess anything skaggy anymore. We draw up in front of the building and I pay the taxi driver. As I travel up in the lift, I remove the chewing gum which I've been chewing for fresh breath and unbutton my shirt a bit. Too far. You can see my bra. I do it up again, let myself into the apartment and call, Eric! There's no answer, so I head towards the office. I am quite pissed, to tell the truth. I'm lurching on my heels, and the walls are going backwards and forwards in my field of vision. We'd better not try and do it standing up. I arrive at the door of the office and look for a few moments at Eric, who's working at his computer.
On the screen I can see the brochure for Blue 42, his new building. The launch party is in a few days, and he's spending all his time preparing his presentation.
Okay. What he should do now is sense the charged, sexual vibe in the room, turn round and see me. But he doesn't.
Eric, I say in my most husky, sensual voice, but still he doesn't move. Suddenly I realise he's wearing earphones.
Eric!
I yell, and at last he turns round. He pulls out his earphones and smiles.
Hi. Good day.
Eric, take me. I push a hand through my hair. Let's do it. Blow my mind. He peers at me for a few seconds.
Sweetheart, have you been drinking?
I may have had a couple of cocktails. Or three? I nod, then hold on to the doorframe for balance. The point is, they made me realise what I want, what I need. Sex.
Okay.
Eric raises his eyebrows.
Maybe you should sober up, have something to eat. Jana made us a great seafood stew.
I don't want seafood stew. I feel like stamping my foot. We have to do it. It's the only way I'll ever remember. What's wrong with him? I was expecting him to leap on me, but instead he's rubbing his forehead with the back of his fist.
Lexi, I don't want to rush you into anything. This is a big decision. The doctor at the hospital said we should only go to whatever stage you're comfortable with.
Well, I'm comfortable with us doing it right now. I undo two more buttons, exposing my La Perla underwired plunge bra. God, my boobs look great in this. I mean, they ought to, for 60 quid. Come on. I lift my chin in a challenging way. I'm your wife. I can see Eric's mind working as he stares at me.
Well, okay.
He shuts down the document, turns off the computer, then walks over, puts his arms around me, and starts kissing me. And it's nice. It is. It's pleasant. His mouth is quite soft. I noticed that before. It's a bit weird for a man. I mean, it's not exactly unsexy, but...
Are you comfortable, Lexi?
Eric's breathy voice comes in my ear. Yes, I whisper back.
Shall we move to the bedroom?
Okay.
Eric leads the way out of the study and I follow him, stumbling slightly on my heels. It all seems a bit oddly formal, like he's showing me into a job interview. In the bedroom, we resume kissing. Eric seems really into it, but I have no idea what I'm supposed to do next. I glimpse the marriage manual on the ottoman and wonder if I could quickly nudge it open to foreplay with my toe, except Eric might notice. Now he's pulling me down onto the bed. I have to reciprocate, but what with? Eeny, meeny, miny... No! Stop it! I'm going to go with chest. Unbutton the shirt, sweeping strokes, clockwise. He does have a good chest. I'll give him that. Firm and muscly from the hour he spends in the gym every day.
Are you comfortable with me touching your breasts?
He murmurs as he starts undoing my bra.
I guess so.
I murmur back.
Why is he squeezing me? It's like he's buying fruit. He's going to give me a bruise in a minute.
Anyway, stop being picky. This is all great. I have a fab husband with a fab body and we're in bed and... Ouch! Oh, that was my nipple.
I'm sorry,
whispers Eric. Listen, sweetheart, are you comfortable with me touching your abdomen?
I guess.
Why did he ask that? Why would I be comfortable with the breasts and not with the abdomen? That doesn't make sense. And to be absolutely honest, I don't know if comfortable is the word. This is all a bit surreal. We're moving around and panting and doing it all like in the book, but I don't feel like I'm going anywhere. Eric's breath is hot on my neck. I think it's time for me to do something else. Buttocks, maybe, or... Oh, right. From the way Eric's hands are moving, looks like we're jumping straight to inner thighs.
You're hot, he's saying, his voice urgent. Jesus, you're hot. This is so hot.
I don't believe this. He says hot the whole time too. He should so have sex with Debs. Oh, no. Obviously he shouldn't have sex with Debs. Erase that thought. Suddenly I realise I'm about 3 steps behind on the whole foreplay thing, not to mention the sex talk. But Eric doesn't even seem to have noticed.
Lexi, sweetheart,
he murmurs breathily, right in my ear.
Yes, I whisper back, wondering if he's about to say, I love you.
Are you comfortable with me putting my penis into your...
Ugh! Before I can stop myself, I push him off me and roll away. Oops. I didn't mean to shove quite so hard.
What's wrong?
Eric sits up in alarm.
Lexi, what happened? Are you okay? Did you have a flashback?
No. I bite my lip. I'm sorry. I just suddenly felt a bit...
I knew it. I knew we were rushing things.
Eric sighs and takes both my hands.
Lexi, talk to me. Why weren't you comfortable? Was it because of some traumatic memory resurfacing?
Oh, God, he looks so earnest. I have to lie. No, I can't lie. Marriages only work if you're totally honest. Wasn't because of a traumatic memory, I say at last, carefully looking past him at the duvet. It was because you said penis.
Penis?
Eric looks utterly stumped.
What's wrong with penis?
It's just, you know, not very sexy, as words go. Eric leans back against the headboard, his brow knitted in a frown.
I find penis sexy, he says at last.
Oh, right, I backtrack quickly. Well, I mean, obviously it is quite sexy. How can he find the word penis sexy? Anyway, it wasn't just that. I hastily changed the subject. It was the way you kept asking me if I was comfortable every 2 seconds. It made things a bit over-formal, don't you think?
I'm just trying to be considerate, says Eric stiffly. This is a pretty strange situation for both of us.
He turns away and starts pulling on his shirt with jerky gestures. I know, I say quickly, and I appreciate it, I really do. I put a hand on his shoulder. But maybe we can loosen up, be more spontaneous. Eric's silent for a while, as though weighing up what I've said.
So, should I sleep here tonight?
He says at last. Oh, in spite of myself, I recoil. What's wrong with me? Eric's my husband. A moment ago I was all for having sex with him. But still, the idea of him sleeping here with me all night seems too intimate. Maybe we could leave it a while,
I'm sorry, it's just...
Fine, I understand. Without meeting my eye, he gets up. I think I'll take a shower.
Okay.
Left alone, I slump back on the pillows. Great. I didn't have sex. I didn't remember anything. My mission totally failed.
I find penis sexy.
I give a sudden gurgle and clap my hand over my mouth in case he can hear me. Beside the bed, the phone starts ringing, but at first I don't move. It's bound to be for Eric. Then I realise he must be in the shower. I reach over and pick up the state-of-the-art Bang & Olufsen receiver. Hello? Hi, comes a dry, familiar voice. It's John.
John? I feel a white-hot thrill. Eric's nowhere in sight, but even so I dart into the adjoining bathroom with the phone, shut the door and lock it.
Are you crazy?
I hiss in lowered, furious tones. What are you ringing here for? It's so risky. What if Eric picked up?
I was expecting Eric to pick up. John sounds a bit baffled. I need to speak with him.
Oh. I halt in sudden realisation. I'm so stupid. Oh, right. Trying to retrieve the situation, I put on a formal wifely voice. Of course, John. I'll just fetch him.
But I need to speak with you more. John cuts me off. We have to meet. We have to talk.
We can't. You have to stop this whole talking thing on the phone and also not on the phone.
Lexi, are you pissed? Says John.
No.
I survey my bloodshot reflection.
Okay, maybe a tad.
There's a snuffling sound at the end of the phone. Is he laughing? I love you, he says.
You don't know me.
I love the girl you were. You are.
You love the cobra, I retort sharply. You love the bitch from hell. Well then, you must be nuts.
You're not a bitch from hell. He's definitely laughing at me.
Everyone else seems to think I am. Was. Whatever.
You were unhappy, and you made some pretty big mistakes, but you weren't a bitch. Beneath my drunken haze, I'm absorbing every word. It's like he's rubbing salve on some raw part of me. I want to hear more.
What?
I swallow.
What kind of mistakes?
I'll tell you when we meet. We'll talk about everything. Lexi, I've missed you so much. Suddenly, his intimate, familiar tone is making me uneasy. Here I am, in my own bathroom, whispering to a guy I don't know. What am I getting into here?
Stop. Just stop.
I cut across him. I need to think.
This ends Disc 7.